Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to a very special episode of Nerd Up. Tonight, I've got Asa Gray.
Hello.
And Dalton.
Yo.
With us is our very special guest, Ian Dallas, creative director of Giant Sparrow Games.
Hi, everybody. Ian. Pleasure to be here.
You say that now.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you.
Yeah, now it's a pleasure.
As of right now, in about 30 minutes, we'll see if he feels the same. Hopefully so. This is our second ever episode of Nerd Up Presents, and we're really, really excited about this one. Ian is coming to us live from California. Where exactly are you, Ian?
I'm in Santa Monica.
Santa Monica. How is Santa Monica right now?
It's great. It's, pretty calm, 80-something degrees out. The weather in Los Angeles is always great.
It was a little over 100 today here in southeast Missouri. I'm more than a little jealous.
I also get the feeling the humidity factor was a lot lower.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I imagine Santa Monica to be fairly humid, isn't it?
Oh, no, not at all. The oceans is gentle nights. It's wonderful.
All right, so re-solidifying my desire to move to California at some point in my life. Or at least somewhere on the West Coast. Okay, we'll go ahead and get started here. For those of you that didn't listen to any of our last shows for the last, I think, 2 weeks, we covered it on Thursday, we covered it on Sunday, that this show was happening. We're talking about What Remains of Edith Finch. We'll be releasing on the Xbox One on Wednesday. I've gotten to play it. Ace has gotten to play it. Dalton hasn't gotten a chance yet, but he's super excited to pick it up for Xbox One. Really, really cool story-driven game. Ian, what can you tell us about this title coming up?
So it's a collection of short stories about a cursed family in Washington State. And you play as Edith Finch coming back to the house you grew up in. And at the point of the game, everybody else in your family is dead. And you are exploring this house, trying to figure out what happened to everybody. And in each of the bedrooms, you'll find a different story about how that family member died. You get to live out kind of the last moments of all these different family members.
Which was just really, really cool. It's a really, really fun, like, house to explore. Because this isn't your average, like, you know, five-bedroom ranch house or something like that. You walk up on this bad boy. It's on the coast, and it's been added to several times in several interesting ways.
It really reminded me of the, is it the Remington House? Where
the Winchester Mystery House.
Winchester Mystery House, that's it. That was the vibe that I got from it, just the different, because all of the additions that you can see from the outside very much were separate from everything else. Like, it didn't look like there was one architectural theme.
No. There may have been originally.
Yeah, that's kind of a similar development. Like, in the Winchester Mystery House, the legend I've heard is that, you know, the widow of the Winchester rifle fortune, heard this ghost that told her the hammers should never stop building. And so she just kept building onto the house, you know, and building these crazy, like, stairs to nowhere and just, like, never stopping. And that's kind of what happened with the Finch House, where because, you know, you're looking at this family that's been there for about 100 years, they keep adding on. And every time somebody in the Finch family dies, they close the bedroom door and then nobody ever goes in that bedroom again. So they start running out of room. And they, you know, choose to build up. And each generation is basically like another floor of the house.
Which is just, it's super, super neat. And there are ways to get to these rooms, because you might be wondering, well, if you're supposed to be exploring this house, how does this happen? And
the rooms are all sealed.
Yeah, the rooms are all, you walk through the door, and the first thing, like, it's even narrated to you that the rooms are sealed shut. And they installed peepholes on all the doors. So you can kind of look in and kind of get a glimpse at it. But there are ways into the rooms. And it's one of those things that something I really would like to have in my own home are all these, like, secret entrances and tunnels all over the place. Because that just sounds so cool to me.
Yeah, no, they're a very imaginative family. One of the things that we did try to balance in the game was a sense of, things that are a little bit more than you might find in a typical home, a little crazy. But, we talked about it on the team as being something that still felt like you could go to Home Depot and buy all the pieces that you needed. Like, they're crazy, but there's, like, a grain of truth in all these secret passages.
Oh, yeah. It's because nothing's, like, wholly out of the ordinary. other than like the add-ons. It's like you feel a little bit like you're going to die from the very top of some of the places, but nothing seems like wholly unrealistic in terms of the construction of this place. And it's just, it's really, really, really cool. I personally really, really enjoyed her brother's story. That was probably my favorite part of the game.
Lewis? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lewis's gameplay. I'm not gonna give away too much, but basically you end up playing this little mini game inside of a game. And it's really, really interesting how it's done. And the ending is the ending of all the individual stories are unsettling, to say the least. But I enjoy it. I enjoy it a whole lot.
Yeah, you said it because Jesse was actually watching me through my playthrough, and whenever he came in, I was just like, yeah. So many times I've ended these stories with no, what? Like I'm exclaiming out loud, and I haven't done that with a game in a really long time outside of like first person shooters out of just like frustration.
Yeah, like playing in the multiplayer.
It hasn't been like storytelling elicited reaction like that in a while.
Yeah.
No, one of the things we found, you know, making a game about short stories, you know, we looked at a lot of references, and Twilight Zone was one of the best references we found for the kind of game we wanted to make. And a lot of the Twilight Zone, you know, comes down to the last, you know, 10 seconds of each of those stories. Like, I mean, Twilight Zone's a little bit ridiculous sometimes, right, where there's crazy twists. But that kind of feeling, like with a short story, there's just a lot of weight that gets put on the end of the story. So that's definitely a focus for us going into it, was making sure that everything is kind of building towards this this moment that's a revelation, but then also feels like, in hindsight, you know, kind of what you might have expected.
Yeah, and I mean, you did a great job doing it. Like there were a couple of them were more subtle, and a few of them were definitely a lot more just holy crap, mm-hmm. I can't believe that just happened. And there are definitely some out there ones too, because there are a couple of them you play through the point of view of an infant, and you play through the point of view of a little girl, and those two were especially the most surreal of them. I really, really enjoyed the music in the bathtub. That was really fun. And yeah, I also enjoyed being a shark.
That was like temp music that our gameplay programmer threw in. You know, we was basically silent, and then he was looking for like what's kind of an over the top joyous symphony, you know, piece of music I could find, and then he threw it in, and we're all like, "That is great. We have to ship that."
Yeah, and I'm so glad you did, because mm-hmm. it was perfect. Yeah, just give our kudos to that guy. And then, yeah, I also just, I liked being a shark rolling downhill.
Thank you.
You guys need to play this game. Like, that happens mm-hmm. at some point.
That part reminded me of, like, those weird games you see on Twitch that are, like, there'll be, like, $3 titles that you can get on Steam.
Oh, like the Goat Simulator and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they're party games. And it was just, like, so even just that, like, you know, it's not a huge segment of the game, but it's just that extra little, what is this? Because it happens very early. Like, it's the first story you really go through.
Yeah, I think Molly is the first one you go through. So,
that was
super fun.
Yeah, kind of sets the tone for the rest of the game. But, you know, we're making a game that's in a lot of ways about the sense of the unknown and trying to create moments that are constantly surprising players. And, you know, that can be a hard thing to sustain, but I'm happy that we've managed to make a whole game that's basically, you know, a collection of those, wow, I can't believe that just happened moments, but at the same time, hopefully when players get to the end, you know, it feels like a satisfying conclusion to everything. It's not like these are all completely random. They're actually kind of like part of telling the story of a family.
It's very satisfying. They're Jesse and Dalton are looking at me because I literally finished it probably 15 minutes before we started doing this. And so like at the end of it, I'm just like, I don't want to have to talk to this person. Like I'm kind of an emotional wreck for right now. Cause like, it's making me feel things like in a great way, but it's just like, oh, I'm not ready to have like a sustained conversation with a person.
Yep. And that was, I did it right before, I beat it. I actually finished getting all the achievements for it. Right before we were having a little get together the other night, and it just maybe like 30 minutes beforehand is when I finished it. And I just walked out like, hi guys.
I gotta process some things.
It was great.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's a dense enough experience that, you know, it's something that after you put the controller down, there's still work that your brain is doing, kind of just processing what has happened to you. I mean, almost like trauma, where it's just, you know, something that you've never experienced before, hopefully, that, you know, your brain takes a little while to digest.
I think trauma is the best possible word for what I felt.
But like, it's like if there was a positive trauma.
Right. Because it was just, it felt like something, yeah, I had to sit and just process.
Because, like, I immediately wanted to just, like, go through and do it again.
Yeah, because I know there's things that I've missed.
Oh, yeah.
Even, like, going through and doing the achievements and stuff. Because there aren't very many on Steam. I'm not sure exactly how many there will be on Xbox One or PlayStation. Is it still 9, Ian?
Actually, for Xbox, we've added a 10th achievement.
Ooh.
So that's a new Xbox-specific bonus feature.
Nice, so I'm going to get that achievement before you guys do.
Says you.
There was one question I wanted to ask you, because I haven't got to play it at all, but I've watched videos for it, just kind of preparing for this. And just like knowing that you were the writer for this game, did you go in kind of knowing exactly what you wanted it to look like? Because it's a very like stylized game, in my opinion, just the differences in some of this. Like parts, did you like whenever you were making this game, did you already have an idea of what you wanted it to look like?
No, we had no idea. I think the game started with trying to make a game that's essentially about the sublime horror of nature. Like the initial version of the game was a scuba diving simulator, which is for me, like when I think back to the sublime horror of nature, like what my mind goes to, like scuba diving as a kid in Washington State. And yeah, everything else is kind of built off of that and trying to make something that sort of evoked those feelings. And, you know, ultimately we ended up with this game that was about, you know, Edith exploring the house and then finding these collections of short stories. And one of the things we really wanted to emphasize was the, you know, the range, like the different perspectives that you get to inhabit, and you know, like the stories, making sure that they felt really specific to each family member that the stories are about. So the art style, you know, kind of, we wanted to push that in different ways so that it felt like you could just visually identify each of the stories, you know, to the family member in question.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously we got some great visuals with it in each, because you kind of go into the point of view of each one of the story characters whenever you pick up these short stories, and they all play very differently. They all even look a little different. Like, it's got that similar art style to it, but it's how it's presented to you is very different. And I really, really enjoyed that. That was just really neat.
Thank you. It was a huge pain, but I'm glad that it all worked out ultimately.
You mentioned Twilight Zone as kind of a point of reference. And probably my favorite part of the game was Barbara. Because I just noticed so many little, between Tales from the Crypt for the, you know, the graphic novel style with the creepy narrator, even down to the Halloween Michael Myers theme-esque music middle to the end of that segment. What other kind of places did you all draw inspiration from?
Oh, well, I mean, for Barbara's story in particular, you know, George Romero was another inspiration. So, you know, Barbara's name actually comes from Night of the Living Dead. And, you know, that kind of like pulp schlocky horror stuff. But for the rest of the game, you know, I think the main inspiration came from literature, like short, creepy stories, particularly this genre of fiction called weird fiction, which includes people like H.P. Lovecraft. And then a little before that, people like Edgar Allan Poe, you know, modern day people like Neil Gaiman, you know, the sort of magical realist authors like Borges and Marquez, who wrote a book called 100 Years of Solitude, which is, you know, in addition to being like a really interesting, phenomenal book, you know, he won the Nobel Prize in literature. You know, it's also a really great story about a family, which is a hard thing to tell, like to find a way to kind of balance how much time you spend with each individual versus like telling the story of, you know, the sort of collection of people over time. So we leaned a lot on a lot of different models. And the song Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen was another source of inspiration. Just like, how do you combine all these really disparate, weird elements into something that feels, you know, kind of cohesive, but still there's a lot of, you know, kind of whimsy and joy in something that never really coalesces into something that you can put your finger on. It's always got this kind of strange hybrid feel to it.
And honestly, the flow was something that was surprisingly well done. I say that because they were very disparate. That's a really good word for it. Particularly Sam's story. You end up going through, you get the story through photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And how that one's done, like, you would think, like, even hearing that, I'm sure some of you are thinking that's kind of jarring of a change. And it's really not. Like, how it's done is just, it's so well done mm-hmm. that I flowed right in, right out. And it was perfect.
Yeah, one of the really surprising things that we found is that a lot of players had very different favorite stories. Like Sam's story, you know, some players really gravitated to and thought, like, oh my God, this is like the best story. And then other players were like, what? That story? That was nothing compared to this other story. And it's nice that we just have such different stories that, you know, everybody kind of has their own favorite that's based on, you know, their own background and what they're interested in.
Yeah, I could see it for sure, because I'm sure that not everyone will agree with my favorite. Just yeah, Lewis's was hands down for me. That was just so neat. The mm-hmm. music in that one was incredible. I meant to look that up. Was that original or was that pulled from somewhere?
No, I think all of that is original. Jeff Russo, our composer, who you know did the score for Fargo, the TV series, and is doing Legion. Now and have done a ton of other great stuff to the music.
Wow. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. And yeah, that would just, I loved that entire section of the game. It was wonderful.
So, like, did your art and music directors, did they just kind of like get a little bit of hatred towards you whenever you said, all right, every section's going to be a little different?
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly some pushback. And I think we were fortunate that we had a lot of things to work from early on that we could draw from for the later stories. So, you know, by the time we had made, you know, say like half a dozen of these stories, it wasn't completely new for the next time around. We also spent a lot of time on the house, which is good because it gave the artists something kind of consistent to do, where each of the stories was its own, you know, kind of exploration and was a little, you know, it's a little exhausting to be in this blue sky mode all of the time. But luckily, each of the bedrooms, you know, took a ton of time from the artists so they can kind of balance these blue sky periods with a little bit more of like, okay, let's just sit down and model, you know, 200 little tiny props that we need to fill up this bedroom.
Man. Yeah, the video game design was always something I wanted to get into back when I started doing computer science and just the more I hear about it, that is a daunting sounding task.
Yeah, I mean, basically one of our designers spent, you know, about a year, year and a half just doing bedrooms, you know, like going through and polishing them up and watching people playtest and refining it.
I don't know if I've put, well, no, this podcast is probably the only thing in the last decade I've put a year and a half into mm-hmm. or more.
How many people were on the team for this?
It varied. So we started with, I think, three people. And then by the time we finished, I think we got up to about 15. So it sort of ramped up and down.
That is surprising. I was expecting a lot more because it's just a really, it's so polished. Like,
yeah, well, I think a lot of that, you know, credit goes to our lead artist, Brandon Martinowitz, who came from the Call of Duty team and, you know, had this mentality of like, just get shit done. And so, you know, the art team in particular really, you know, took off a lot and, you know, just made these huge lists of things. And then Brandon was on everybody every day. He's like, all right, how you doing? Let's get this stuff done. So, yeah, the game visually especially, you know, looks like something that usually would have taken a much larger team.
I'm really curious, like, what the adjustment was for him from going to something like Call of Duty, where you've got Activision breathing down your neck, to something a little bit more friendly.
Well, even just the difference between a Call of Duty game and this very much just slower paced, story driven not so much focused on big action pieces or
yeah
environments like that.
Yeah, I mean you could definitely do a whole show just asking Brandon what that transition was like for him. But you know, I think in some ways our game, you know, transitioned as well. Like our game was not as realistically modeled and lit before he came on, but that was kind of what his background was like. And he was really interested in lighting. So that became something that we spent a lot of time on in the house. From a technical standpoint, you know, a lot of work improving the Unreal 4 lighting workflow so that we could light things the way that we wanted to. And I think Brandon changed a little bit and the game changed a little bit as a result. And it's kind of the way game development goes. It's, you know, you just take what you have and, make the best thing you can.
Yeah, that's another thing that I'm pretty prone to is just tweaking. And I don't know if I would ever be satisfied with any kind of a product.
Yeah, well, that's what's nice about games is that ultimately you do have to ship these things. And so we all make hopefully intelligent, wise cuts towards the end in order to get everything into an actual doable state and not the idealized version that would take you the rest of your life.
And I mean, props, like everything, like I said, everything was polished. Everything is super well done. I did play it on PC. So I had the fortune of having my, my rig set up for it. I'm sure it'll look just as good on Xbox One, and I'm understanding that it looks just as good on PS4. So, though not at quite at that 60 frames per second.
Right. The 4K support is a little easier to achieve on PC with a $1,000 graphics card than it is on an Xbox or PS4.
A little bit. though, yeah, I'm sure that there is, it's still quality on either console versus PC. I can't imagine it not being quality.
Especially with this style of game, makes it just a lot easier because it's less of a gameplay experience, more of just a storytelling experience. And so, yep. Especially with how powerful the PS4 and Xbox One are just normally.
Yeah, I mean, everything will look still super pretty. I have no doubt in my mind that everything will look great. And I know, like, and I don't mean to sound like a PC Master Race. Most of our listeners out there know I do have a PlayStation 4 and an Xbox One in addition to my PC. That's just my preferred platform. So yeah.
Yeah, and I can say there are fewer bugs on the PS4 and the Xbox. This is our first PC game, and it was pretty sobering how many weird configurations of PCs there are out there. I think we fixed all the bugs now that we're aware of, but we had some really funny ones with the game running at like 200 frames per second, which we never really tested because we didn't have computers that were that fast. But out in the wild, we got reports back from people being like, I seem to get stuck when I'm playing the game at 200 frames a second.
Why are you playing the game at 200 frames a second? That's unnecessary.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I did not run into that. my PC is nice. It ran it. I capped it at 60, though. I figured that was probably the appropriate amount.
What kind of a... Because clearly the pacing is a very deliberate choice. And even, like, between all of the stories themselves were paced very well. I didn't really find myself getting too, like, lost or felt like things were moving too fast that I couldn't process them. But even just as Edith going through the house, everything was... you never felt like you were somewhere longer than you needed to be.
No, thanks. That's just... 3 or 4 years of playtesting and watching what players do and kind of trying to massage things a bit to achieve that pacing that you're talking about. And you know, I think for us, the goal was to get to a point where for a regular player, they would hear Edith say something like, you know, every 20 to 30 seconds or so. So it always felt like you were moving on to something new. And if you wanted to, you know, you could take time out to, you know, really dig into the details of any place that you're in. But, you know, trying to balance, the sense of exploring this really unfamiliar, strange space, but not having players feel like it was too confusing for them. because there's a lot going on in the game. And that was something that, you know, again, like playtesting was really helpful for, because as developers, like, we know all of these spaces, we know all these stories, and it's very easy for us to navigate them. But, you know, it's hard to remember that as a player, you know, you're not just dealing with the challenges of navigating a space, you're also kind of wondering about this story that you just played, you know, a minute ago, and you're still, your brain's kind of occupied on that. And maybe you're thinking about the story that's coming up and how they're related. And so, yeah, it's just a lot of making something, doing a really bad job of it, and having people get confused, and then, you know, slowly fixing that by watching people play, so that ultimately people like yourself who are playing, you know, in the real world have an experience that feels like, oh, oddly prescient that this thing was paced, you know, just to the way that I experienced it.
Yeah, I mean, I never felt like there wasn't any lag. Like, and I say as in, there wasn't any point where I just felt like everything slowed down too much. That was the thing I usually run into in story mode, or like in story games, like really story driven games. There's a lot of lulls, I find, especially like the kind of person that I am. I like to explore and see everything. I accidentally knocked out the wait for Edith to finish her dialogue in each room. I knocked that out on the first try, not even realizing that was going to be an achievement. Because I really, really like to explore everything and see everything, make sure I don't miss something. And whenever I play that with a really story-driven game, I end up with a lot of points of just, I am bored now. Nothing's grabbing me. Like, these are really neat textures and everything, and it's pretty, but I'm not being rewarded for exploring here. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely something I got out of Edith Finch.
It's like, it's kind of a frustrating problem to see people who are like almost ruining their own experience, you know, by going off and just spending forever doing stuff. But, you know, I think as long as players understand where they're meant to go, then it feels like even if they may not, you know, have a thrilling experience looking into every trash can, like they understand that it's something that they are choosing to do. And, you know, the Finch house is detailed enough that, you know, it does reward a certain amount of peering into, you know, this trash can or that trash can and looking around at what's going on. And then hopefully there's also in this game, you know, a lot that is kind of going on in your head beyond just looking at this room and kind of looking at whatever, like pictures on the walls. It's embedded within a larger story. So it's not just, you know, wondering about this particular picture. It's wondering like, oh, I see that's probably this character and he's, you know, related to this other character that I've seen. And there's, you know, kind of a bigger family story that's at play.
I was rewarded for my looking in trash cans. It worked out just fine.
I also really like that the narration kind of led the way as well. Like for different doors and openings and passages, you just kind of literally just followed the story.
Yeah, literally followed the story. It showed up in front of you.
I love that. Because I like to explore, but I'm not good at it. So I find like it's real easy for me to get lost in, you know, bigger games. And so, but I like that wasn't a problem that I had that I ran into. Like I was able to explore on my own, but I never found myself getting turned around or lost because there's such a forward progression throughout the entire game.
Yeah, no, we interestingly talked about it as wanting it to feel like Alice in Wonderland falling down the rabbit hole, where you're just kind of effortlessly breezing past, you know, all of these things that are coming at you. So glad that it sounds like you had an experience that was just like what we hoped.
Oh, all right. And so I know this is actually your second game. The Unfinished Swan, I believe, was the first title that you guys worked on.
Yeah, the PS2 game came out in 2012.
Yeah. How did any of that correlate to this game here? Like any of your experiences there or anything else?
Very much so. I think in that game we started from a similar place of you know, beginning with a feeling, and in The Unfinished Swan, it was about, you know, what it feels like to be in an unfamiliar landscape. Like you're in this totally white world and you have these paintballs you can splatter to reveal the world around you. But, you know, we didn't really have an idea of what the game was going to become. It was just this initial like, oh, this is a really interesting feeling of, you know, kind of being lost, but also enjoying being lost, like because you have these tools that let you explore the world. And so for Edith Finch, you know, we began this idea of exploring the sublime horror of nature, like coming in contact with something that is simultaneously beautiful, but also a little overwhelming. And we had no idea what that was going to be like as a game. We just knew that that was an interesting kind of feeling that we wanted to explore as game developers. And, you know, I think on this project, we spent a lot of time where we had no idea what this thing was going to become, but because the process had worked well enough on Unfinished Swan, we just kind of let it go and trusted that eventually things would coalesce and you know, it would turn into a game.
And so it did. All right. Well, I mean, I'm out of questions, fellas.
So growing up, like, did you play games growing up? Were you just a fan in general? Like, is this something you've always wanted to do, or?
Yeah, no, definitely. Games were really important to me as a child. Like initially, the 8-bit Nintendo, like Super Mario Brothers era. And then later on, like more PC games like Thief and Ultima Underworld. And yeah, I mean, making games is something that was always really interesting to me.
And here you are.
Making them.
Yeah, I mean, I had a detour through being a comedy writer for, I don't know, almost a decade or so working on other projects. But, you know, found my way back into video games.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. You said a comic writer?
A comedy writer. So comedy I used to work writer. At The Onion and then on various like TV shows and animated series and stuff.
Well, that's cool. Which animated series did you work on, out of curiosity?
A show called Drawn Together that was on Comedy Central. And then I also worked on a show called Spaceballs, the animated series.
Oh, that's awesome.
You just made a friend in Dalton. He's, he just went full like fangirl over here.
Oh, I love Drawn Together.
Oh,
I was probably way too young to watch it when it aired, but I love Drawn Together.
This is a fun show. I do remember I was early teens when I started when that show came on. I started watching it. My dad walked in and saw it, and he had some interesting words for me, ending with "Please change the channel," which I did until he left, and then I changed it back. Yeah, no, that's really really cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's some funny overlap between what it's like making a TV show, you know, versus making a video game, where, you know, you've got a room full of people with bizarre ideas, and you're just trying to, you know, land the plane, basically. Like, how do you keep these things together? And Drawn Together was, I think, a really nice blend of a whole bunch of different crazy ideas that somehow worked pretty well together. And hopefully, Edith Finch, you know, has a similar experience for people.
And really, it just back when reality TV shows were all that was on TV, Drawn Together was just a super fun little addition to that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dalton, I think you had another question.
Yeah, and this is we had a kind of a similar one with a comic book artist not too long ago, but I kind of wanted to ask if you had one like IP in video games in general that they were just like, all right, we're going to give you one game. What IP would it be, and what would you make?
You mean like a video game that exists or an IP from outside of video games?
Like one that like already in video games. So like if Nintendo said, hey, we want you to do a Mario game, but you get to choose what you get to do with it. Like is there anything like that you'd be super interested in?
That's a tough question. I don't know. I think, you know, certainly if anyone was doing another Katamari game, you know, I would love to be involved at some level of that. There was a Japanese game called Mr. Mosquito, where you played as a mosquito biting the members of the Japanese family. That I feel like, you know, it's probably a really good game. That was not necessarily the best version of that idea, but I would love to play a game where I could be a mosquito. But yeah, Katamari or Mr. Mosquito would be my
vote. I love Katamari. That's one of my favorite PS2 games to play.
Yeah, no, I mean it really holds up well.
Yeah, I played it on the Vita for the first time. That was the first place I ever tried it. And it was entertaining. It was a great little time killer for sure. Mm-hmm. And then it turned into a lot of time killer. So anyway, I did think of one more question. Because, you know, in the same vein of Dalton there, Do you have any tips for anybody out there that's, you know, wanting to get into that business of creating video games?
Yeah, sure. I mean, just start making stuff, I think, is the biggest tip. You know, because you can learn things in school or reading books or whatever, but, you know, there's no substitute for just, like, having something that you yourself want to make, because you'll end up learning a lot just in order to get anything done. And it's a lot of fun. I think, you know, getting to a point where you can have something in your head and then actually see it work, you know, and come to life is really rewarding. And there's, you know, a lot of studying and trial and error and all that stuff that goes into getting good at anything. But, you know, just making something and figuring out what you yourself are really excited about, and not just doing somebody else's tutorials, but like figuring out what is the thing that you really want to see is I think a good first step.
All right. I like it. Okay. So yeah, that's all I've got. Asa Dalton, last chance here.
I'm good.
So other, with the exception of What Remains of Edith Finch coming out on Wednesday, is there anything in the video game world that you're excited for, like any upcoming titles that you're looking forward to playing, or if you still kind of, I'm assuming this has kept you very busy for a while.
Yes.
So if you've been playing anything.
Right. No, I have not had a chance to play Breath of the Wild yet. Sort of embarrassing, but I figured that after the Xbox release of Edith Finch, then I would have a little bit of a vacation. So I am personally very much looking forward to Breath of the Wild and also Last Guardian, which I have not had a chance to play yet. So.
You've definitely deserved the vacation.
Yes. And Breath of the Wild is a great pick for a vacation play.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. All right. Well, Ian, is there anything you want to say to our listeners before we conclude here?
No, just thank you so much for having me. And you can find us on Twitter at Giant Sparrow. And also our website is giantsparrow.com.
All right. And again, guys, if you have a PS4 or if you have Steam, it's out there now. You can go grab it on either of those platforms. And then it will be coming out on Xbox One. I know we got a lot of Xbox listeners out there. Ian, the price point is $19.99. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's the price point on all three platforms.
There we go. $19.99 on Xbox One, worth every cent. I spend more than that at the movie theaters, and this was a better experience.
Yep.
All right, well, thanks again, Ian, for coming on the show, and thank you out there in listener land for listening. We'll see you guys next time.